It's Thursday, the 26th of June, 2025, and time again for weekly Reveille here on Sun Sounds of Arizona. This is your volunteer reader, Chuck Kaufman, in Flagstaff, bringing you information of interest to our veterans community here in Arizona. Today we have news from our military news websites, the publications and websites of our veterans service organizations, as well as the Veterans Administration. So let's get started with Stripes.com. Our first article from Stripes.com is by Linda Hershey from the 24th of June. VA Secretary says DOGE workers at the agency's headquarters serving as advisors. Washington. Department of Veterans Affairs Secretary Doug Collins acknowledged Tuesday in the waning minutes of a contentious budget hearing with Senate appropriators that the Department of Government Efficiency continues to work at VA headquarters with access to the agency's contracts and services. But Collins did not disclose whether the three workers assigned to the VA's Washington office from DOGE, the group formed by tech billionaire Elon Musk, have authority and permission to review the medical records of veterans. They're advisors. They're looking through our contracts and stuff like that, Collins said in response to repeated questions by Senator John Ossoff, Democrat of Georgia, at a hearing of the Senate Appropriations Committee's subpanel on military construction, Veterans Affairs, and related agencies. The hearing was to review the $441.3 billion spending plan that the VA has proposed for fiscal 2026, which starts October the 1st. This spending proposal is 10% higher than the 2025 budget. But Ossoff, the top Democrat on the subpanel, complained several times at the hearing about unresponsiveness by Collins on his stated plans to downsize the VA as federal agencies follow President Donald Trump's executive order to cut staff. Congress and this subcommittee are going to continue to ask for information about your plans and intentions and department operations because, as you know from your time in Congress, that's our job. We can't legislate just based on someone's word or promise, Ossoff said. Collins, a military chaplain and former Georgia congressman, said his early focus as VA secretary is to make the agency more effective by reducing administration and bureaucracy. The VA is the second largest federal agency after the Defense Department. I'm trying to make sure that veterans remain the focus and not the organization itself, Collins said. But he provided few details on the role of representatives from DOGE at VA headquarters. Collins said the DOGE workers serve as in advisory roles at the agency's headquarters. Musk, as a senior advisor to Trump, set hand-picked technology workers from DOGE into federal agencies to review operations and root out waste. Though Musk recently departed from Washington, Collins said the work of DOGE continues. You're talking about our liaisons from DOGE who actually work for the VA, Collins said in response to questions from Ossoff about the group's involvement. Have they accessed VA patient medical records? Ossoff asked. They are acting in their role as a normal VA employee would do and are authorized to do anything that they're currently doing, Collins responded. Collins then told Ossoff that he would seek to provide more information after the hearing. I'll be happy to take these further for the record, he said. Collins emphasized throughout the hearing that he's trying new approaches to deliver benefits and services faster and more effectively. He said he's working to provide veterans easier access to medical care, improve the quality of VA services, and make certain that there is efficient use of taxpayer dollars. 2 million disability claims have been processed in fiscal 2025, which is 14% higher than 2024, Collins said. The backlog of veterans claims, which was 260,000 in February, is now less than 190,000, he said. But Senator John Boozman, Republican of Arkansas, the subcommittee chairman, said at the start of the hearing that the subcommittee has yet to receive justification materials to support spending requests for 2026 because of delays by the VA. These are essential to the committee's work, he said. Boozman also told Collins that VA's stated plans to cut the size of its workforce and reorganize the agency have led to numerous calls from veterans about potential impacts on health care, benefits, and services. Members are hearing from our constituents regularly on this, he said. This subcommittee wants to ensure you have the right people in the right roles. Budget figures for 2026 show spending for non-VA medical care by private doctors will grow from $22.5 billion to $34 billion, and funding for VA medical services would decrease from $69 billion to $57 billion. Collins said a big challenge facing the VA is recruiting and hiring doctors and other medical personnel who can get much higher salaries in the private sector. He said doctors can earn twice as much in the private sector as they do at the VA. He suggested there is a need to reconsider salary levels for the VA's top medical personnel. Collins said his plan for fiscal 2026 is to maintain mission essential jobs such as doctors, nurses, and claims processors, but reduce administrative and managerial posts. In 2024, discussions in Congress about the need to reform VA were often just a thinly veiled request for more employees. But the department's history shows that adding more employees to the system does not automatically mean better results, he said. Collins said the number of VA employees grew by more than 52,000 from fiscal 2021 to 2024. He said the VA now employs 465,000 workers. Did all those extra people make things better for veterans? No. In fact, VA's performance got worse as healthcare wait times rose and the number of veterans waiting for disability benefits increased. Something must change, and it's up to us to make that change, he said. And that's VA Secretary says DOJ workers at the agency's headquarters serving as advisors. Next, an article by Linda F. Hershey of Stars and Stripes from the 24th of June. VA urges holdouts still receiving veterans benefits by paper check to move to electronic banking. Washington. The Department of Veterans Affairs is making a final push to move veterans who receive benefits by paper check to get the money directly deposited to an account after President Donald Trump ordered a shift to electronic banking for federal agencies by September the 30th. But more than 120,000 veterans and their family members continue to collect VA checks monthly by mail for disability, survivor support, and other compensation. These veterans and their beneficiaries opted not to use direct deposit or they do not have a bank account, the VA said. The Trump administration set a target date of September the 30th, the last day of fiscal 2025, for federal agencies to phase out check disbursements and receipts to the extent possible under law, according to an executive order signed by Trump. Transactions by paper check are more costly for the federal government to process and raise the risk of lost payments, theft, and delays, according to the executive order. I've used direct deposit for 15 years, never once had a problem. I don't have to worry about someone stealing a check from my mailbox, said Billy Wide, a 73-year-old Ohio veteran who receives monthly VA disability payments for injuries incurred while on active duty in the Navy from 1969 to 1973. Wide is a former petty officer who served in Vietnam. Paper checks issued by the Treasury Department are 16 times more likely to be reported lost or stolen, returned undeliverable, or altered than an electronic funds transfer, according to the executive order. But with direct deposit, Wide said he knows when his monthly disability payments will arrive in his bank account, making it easier to budget household expenses. I don't have to worry about the checks not showing up, Wide said, who is retired and depends upon the compensation to pay for groceries and other essentials. But even with the president's executive order, the VA cannot force a veteran or a veteran's family member to choose direct deposit over a paper check, the VA said. If a veteran does not want to get banked or if they simply like receiving a check, they can continue to do so despite the risks, said Macaulay Porter, the VA's Deputy Assistant Secretary of Public Affairs. Porter said the VA has had success in helping veterans establish bank accounts to make it more convenient to receive their benefits. More than 500,000 veterans have used the program to open bank accounts since 2019. The VA is partnered with 130 financial institutions that have pledged to provide veterans and their family with free and low-cost banking services to open accounts. Financial counseling is also a free service for veterans. VA figures do not suggest a higher proportion of veterans than the general population do not use the nation's financial system, Porter said. But White said he has buddies from military service who refuse to share their personal bank account information with the VA to allow for electronic funds transfers. They'd rather cash their checks and stash their money in a safe at home, he said, somewhat to hide the information from ex-wives or the IRS. Others just don't trust Uncle Sam at all. And that's VA urges holdouts still receiving veterans benefits by paper check to move to electronic banking. Our next article from Stripes.com, Guardian escorts remains of World War II uncle after nearly 80 years, a humbling and inspiring experience. This is from the 22nd of June. Just days after Memorial Day, a Space Force Guardian escorted the remains of her great-great-uncle, Staff Sergeant Loring E. Lord, a U.S. Army Air Force's gunner killed in action during World War II, nearly 80 years after he was declared missing in action, according to a service news release. Lord's remains were returned to Boston on May 29th, and his final interment with full military honors was held on June 7th. Second Lieutenant Catherine Hendel accompanied him to his final resting place. Escorting him home was a humbling and inspiring experience, said Hendel, who is stationed at Space Training and Readiness Command, Peterson Space Force Base, Colorado. The amount of care everyone put into making sure this hero was welcomed home with the highest honors was incredible. We had the support of police, firefighters, and citizens along the entire journey. It made me reflect on the true meaning of his sacrifice and added even more weight to my own service. The 1945 mission Lord took part in was part of a broader Allied effort to disrupt German communication lines ahead of the planned Rhine River crossing, according to a Defense POW MIA accounting agency historical analysis. Witness accounts documented in the missing aircrew report describe intense, accurate flak over the target area. Lord's A-26B Invader was hit directly and seen falling away from formation. No parachutes were observed. Lord was listed as missing in action. His true fellow crew members' remains were recovered and identified in 1947, but Lord's remains were not. In 1949, the U.S. Army officially declared Lord as non-recoverable. My mother remembers her aunt going from hospital to hospital in Washington, D.C., hoping to find him, said Amy Hendel, Catherine's mother. They didn't know if he was missing, captured, or wounded. It was that desperate to find answers. In 2014, a German researcher contacted the DPAA with new information about a likely crash site near Gross Rechen. Using wartime aerial imagery and local witness accounts, DPAA teams conducted excavations in 2018 and 2019. Among the findings were structural aircraft components, personal effects, and a machine gun confirmed to match Lord's aircraft. DNA analysis and forensic examination ultimately identified the remains as his. The identification was formally announced in 2024. I grew up hearing about Uncle Loring, Amy Hendel said. His picture was always on the shelf at my grandmother's and great aunt's home. The pain of not knowing, of having no closure, was something they both carried all their lives. Now, 80 years later, we finally have an answer, and we finally get to bring him home. That's Guardian escorts remains of World War II uncle after nearly 80 years, a humbling and inspiring experience. Well, let's move on now to the Task and Purpose website. For this article, U.S. Japan mark 80 years since the end of the Battle of Okinawa. 8 decades ago, the Allies claimed victory in the bloodiest battle in the Pacific Theater. This is by Nicholas Slayton and is from the 23rd of June. On April 1, 1945, thousands of American troops landed on the beaches of Okinawa, a heavily fortified Pacific island south of Japan. Nearly 3 months later, the United States claimed victory over Japan at the cost of thousands of Marines and soldiers. 80 years since the Battle of Okinawa, a memorial to the dead stands on the island, with residents commemorating the end of the fighting each year. This year, the occasion is one of the last major anniversary events marking 8 decades of the last year of World War II. The fighting ended on June 22, 1945. June 23rd is celebrated on the island, home to the U.S. military's important Kadena Air Base, as Okinawa Memorial Day. By the spring of 1945, Japan was on the retreat, having lost several of its major island fortresses in the Pacific. However, the Japanese military was continually putting up major resistance, forcing the American military to fight tooth and nail for every piece of land as it moved west towards the Japanese home islands. With a bloody victory won in Iwo Jima in March, American forces were working on taking the Ryukyu Islands to the south of Japan. If they could, it would give them a staging ground only a few hundred miles from Japan and further cut off the enemy. If the Allies were to take Japan, this was before the atomic bombings of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, plans called for enacting a ground invasion dubbed Operation Downfall. Then, Okinawa needed to fall first. The Imperial Japanese military also realized the importance of the island. They heavily fortified their position, putting in 2 full divisions and several smaller units to inflict massive casualties on the invaders. Given the importance of the mission, the Allies devoted extensive resources to the invasion. The U.S. military created the 10th Army, formed out of 4 Army divisions and 3 Marine divisions. Aided by a large naval force, they staged the main landing on April 1st. It would be the largest amphibious assault in the Pacific theater. Many of the Marines and soldiers fighting on Okinawa were veterans of the island-hopping campaign. However, the 82 days of fighting on Okinawa would not be easy. Japanese forces set up extensive defenses, aiming to lure Americans deeply inland to where they could inflict heavy casualties. The invasion was not helped by the weather or Okinawa's rough terrain, with troops finding themselves caught in hellish storms, walking into Japanese ambushes or combinations of the two. Eugene Sledge, whose memoir With the Old Breed, recounted the battle and provided some of the basis for the miniseries The Pacific, recounted the overflowing mud, flooding foxholes, and miserable conditions that left soldiers and Marines worn down as the combat was. At sea, the worn-down Japanese Navy heavily utilized kamikaze attacks to strike the larger British and American navies. These damaged the aircraft carrier, the USS Bunker Hill, among others. However, the U.S. Navy managed to score heavy victories, including sinking the battleship Yamato in April 1945. Slowly, the ground invasion gained momentum. In May, after 2 months, Americans captured the fortified area around Shuri Castle. Japanese forces were pressed back to one end of the island. Despite that, they continued to resist. It was only on June 22nd fighting ended, and the 10th Army raised the flag in conquest. Ultimately, the fighting cost the lives of 12,000 Americans. 3 times as many were wounded. Japanese forces saw more than 94,000 killed, with 7,000 captured, and the civilians who lived on the island were not spared. The dense forests, house-to-house combat, and Japanese guerrilla tactics, plus the heavy firepower the U.S. used to take out their entrenched positions, meant many were caught in the crossfire. An estimated tens of thousands, at least 40,000, were killed. The heavy losses and fierce Japanese defense played a major role in how the United States decided to pursue the rest of the war. It also contributed to the decision to use the new atomic bomb on Japan. Harry S. Truman, who took over as president after the battle had begun, was troubled by the heavy losses in the battle, eventually remarking that he hoped to avoid Okinawa from one end of Japan to the other. 80 years after the U.S. claimed victory, remnants of the battle remain. Unexploded ordnance on Okinawa is an ongoing problem, with more than 2,000 tons of munitions safely detonated over the last 50 years. This year, some events were held to commemorate the start of the battle in April. Earlier this month, on June the 7th, American soldiers and sailors, alongside members of the Japanese Self-Defense Forces, staged a cleaning of the Okinawa Peace Memorial Park, ending with laying flowers to honor the dead from the 82-day-long battle. Today, June the 23rd, is Okinawa Memorial Day in the prefecture. Japanese Prime Minister Shigeru Ishiba joined local officials for the occasion, where they added more than 300 new names to a wall commemorating the people confirmed to have died in one of the bloodiest battles in all of World War II. And that's U.S.-Japan mark 80 years since the end of the Battle of Okinawa. Our next article from Task and Purpose: an Army base will now honor a Buffalo soldier. Fort Lee is now named for Private Fitz Lee. The new namesake was a Buffalo soldier who earned the Medal of Honor. This is by Nicholas Slayton from the 19th of June. When the U.S. Army announced on June the 10th that it was changing the names of seven bases back to their earlier designations, it skipped over one major milestone. Fort Lee in Virginia will now be the first base to be named after a Buffalo soldier. The bases reverted back to their names, which had previously honored Confederate leaders, although with new, non-Confederate namesakes. In the case of Fort Lee, rather than Robert E. Lee, a Confederate general, it's now named for Private Fitz Lee, a Buffalo soldier. Fitz Lee fought in the Spanish-American War and earned the Medal of Honor for his actions at Tayabacoa, Cuba, when he helped rescue trapped soldiers. Although the biography released by the Army noted he was a Buffalo soldier, the Army's announcement did not highlight that this is the first time a base is named for someone who was a part of the units, four regiments of black soldiers formed after the Civil War, who served notably during the wars on the Western frontier and in the Spanish-American War. Cale Carter, a historian and the director of exhibitions at the Buffalo Soldiers Museum in Houston, Texas, said that he was taken aback by the choice of the base's namesake, in part because Fitz Lee is not widely known and his service happened in a part of the Buffalo Soldiers' history that isn't largely focused on. They went about with someone who had a Medal of Honor, but from a conflict you don't see much coverage of, he said. 2 years ago, the Army base that is once again known as Fort Lee was one of several U.S. military installations, buildings, and roads renamed in 2022 and 2023 following the recommendations of a special committee. The actions came from a wide push to remove names honoring members of the Confederacy who violently opposed the Union. Many of the selected names instead honored notable soldiers and Army leaders, including Hal Moore and the Medal of Honor recipient William Henry Johnson. Fort Lee was renamed to Fort Gregg Adams, honoring both Lieutenant General Arthur Gregg and Lieutenant Colonel Charity Adams, black service members who joined during a time when the Army was segregated. Gregg would eventually become the Deputy Chief of Staff for Logistics for the Army, while Adams commanded the 6888th Central Postal Directory during World War II. At the time, it was the first Army base to be named for African Americans. Reversion to Fort Lee strips the names of Gregg and Adams, but it also creates another milestone: Buffalo soldiers. The Buffalo soldiers, as they came to be known, were first formed in 1866 in the aftermath of the Civil War. They initially started with cavalry units, the 9th and 10th Cavalry, and soon infantry regiments followed, formalized as the 24th and 25th Infantry Regiments. They found themselves active on the American Western frontier, working on infrastructure as the Army pushed west and fighting skirmishes and small battles against Native Americans who resisted the expansion. The exact origin of the nickname Buffalo Soldiers isn't clear, but it's widely believed to come from their actions fighting on the plains. However, as the American reach in the Western Hemisphere expanded, the soldiers from the regiment soon found themselves taking part in actions in Cuba, the Philippines, and Mexico. It was then that the soldiers found themselves up against formal military forces. In Cuba, they took part in the Battle of San Juan Hill. When you look at the Spanish-American War, you start seeing these regiments get exposed to the wider public and gain more recognition, Carter said. They're proving their performance under fire. The Buffalo Soldiers' regiments themselves did not go overseas to join the American forces fighting in World War I. However, several of the veterans from those wars were brought in as non-commissioned officers for the newly formed 92nd and 93rd Infantry Divisions that did, Carter said. The 92nd Infantry Division, which fought in both World Wars, gained the nickname the Buffaloes, drawing on the legacy of the Buffalo Soldiers. The 25th Infantry Regiment would take part in the Pacific Theater of World War II, nearly 80 years after the initial Buffalo Soldier units were first raised. The term Buffalo Soldier stuck around well into the 20th century. The last Buffalo Soldier, Robert Dixon, died in 2024 at the age of 103. Several monuments and markers at U.S. Army installations are named for the units. The once again Fort Lee, located in Prince George County, Virginia, is a logistics hub for the U.S. Army. It's the home to the Army Combined Arms Support Command and several sustainment and transportation-related schools. Private Fitz Lee. There are limited details on Fitz Lee's early life, but according to the National Park Service, Fitz Lee was born in Dinwiddie County, Virginia, in June 1866, 1 year after the end of the Civil War. He joined the Army's 10th Cavalry as the United States found itself at war with Spain in the Philippines and the Caribbean. Lee went to Cuba. In 1898, he was part of a group of 10th Cavalry soldiers selected for a mission to get behind Spanish lines to connect with and resupply Cuban rebels. That is how Lee and other soldiers found themselves on the USS Florida on June 30, 1898, landing in Tayapacoa, Cuba. They ran into a Spanish blockhouse and were forced to retreat, but several American and Cuban fighters were left wounded. Four attempts to get the trapped soldiers failed, with each party from the Florida falling back in the face of Spanish fire. A fifth rescue party was formed with four soldiers of the 10th Cavalry volunteering: Lee, Private Dennis Bell, Sergeant William H. Tompkins, and Corporal George H. Wanton went ashore with Second Lieutenant George Ahern. They succeeded in surprising the enemy, rescuing the captives, and escaping back to the ship. For their actions, the four enlisted soldiers were awarded the Medal of Honor. They were the last black soldiers to receive it outright for decades, rather than be awarded it years later via an ungraded award. Lee voluntarily went ashore in the face of the enemy and aided in the rescue of his wounded comrades. This, after several previous attempts had been frustrated, his Medal of Honor citation reads. The four enlisted soldiers each received the Medal of Honor for their actions in the following year. Lee, his health worsening after his time in Cuba, was at a hospital in Fort Bliss, Texas. He received a medical discharge from the Army on July the 5th. He moved to Leavenworth, Kansas, but his health continued to decline, with Lee eventually going blind. He died September 14, 1899, and was buried at Fort Leavenworth National Cemetery. The exact illness is known, but it was at a time when more soldiers died from illness than combat, Carter noted. Alongside Fitz Lee, two other black soldiers are now namesakes to the renamed bases: First Sergeant Robert A. Penn and Private Bruce Anderson, who provided part of the name for Fort A.P. Hill. Both fought in the Civil War and also earned the Medal of Honor for their actions fighting for the Union. Carter hopes that with the new designation, the Army base will have an education element that can teach current soldiers not just about Lee, but also the Buffalo Soldiers and their legacy. Lee, despite his early death after the war, does have photographs, but many decorated Buffalo soldiers, particularly from the frontier conflicts, have limited biographies and information. Carter said, leaving them not particularly well known. Hopefully, this will drive more interest in Lee, he said. And that's an Army base will now honor a Buffalo soldier. You're listening to Weekly Reveille here on Sun Sounds of Arizona with your volunteer reader, Chuck Kaufman. If you've ever wanted to listen to Weekly Reveille and pick up some of those numerous websites and links that are available from va.gov, you can go back and listen to the program at a time of your choosing by going to the Sun Sounds of Arizona website at sunsounds.org. Additionally, that same capability is available using the Sun Sounds of Arizona app, available for your iPhone or iPad, by going to the Apple App Store, or for your Android phone or tablet, by going to the Google Play Store and downloading the app. And finally, you can listen to Sun Sounds of Arizona programming, including Weekly Reveille, streaming on your Amazon Dot or Echo. Well, let's turn to the MilitaryTimes.com website for this article. VA staff finished 2 million disability claims faster than ever this year. This is from the 24th of June by Leo Shane III. Veterans Affairs officials on Tuesday announced staffers had already processed more than 2 million disability benefits claims this fiscal year, the fastest the department has ever reached that mark. The processing milestone occurred nearly 1 month earlier than fiscal 2024 and puts department claims workers on pace for another record-breaking year in terms of total cases completed. The work finished thus far represents almost $120 billion in compensation and pension benefits to veterans and survivors paid out since last October. In a statement, VA Secretary Doug Collins credited the progress to a refocusing of the department's mission in recent months. VA has reduced the claims backlog and has processed these claims faster than ever for a simple reason. We're focused on getting results for veterans, he said. We're just getting started in our mission to help veterans, families, caregivers, and survivors get the care and benefits they've earned. The department's progress on processing disability claims dates back to before the change in presidential administrations. VA has set new records in total claims processed each of the last 3 fiscal years, reaching 2.5 million cases completed in fiscal 2024. The rise has become in part because of the steadily increasing total number of claims filed annually, which at times has outpaced processing capacity. The 2022 PACT Act expanded the number of veterans eligible to apply to VA for compensation related to military toxic exposures, injuries, and adding hundreds of thousands of cases to annual counts. Related to that, VA disability claims backlog, which counts the total number of first-time benefits cases that take up more than 4 months to complete, rose to more than 400,000 cases in late 2023, up from about 70,000 cases before the start of the COVID-19 pandemic. In the last 18 months, that number has dropped by more than 200,000 cases, with a reduction of nearly 70,000 backlogged claims since February alone. Officials from the previous presidential administration had predicted it would take until 2026 to bring those numbers down to early 2020 levels again. At the current processing level, VA is on pace to complete about 2.8 million disability claims this fiscal year, which ends on October the 1st. Last year, the department processed 2.5 million claims, a new record. Collins has suggested cutting VA staffers in coming months to help boost efficiency within the department, but has promised that benefits processing will not be impacted by any such moves. And that's VA staff finished 2 million disability claims faster than ever this year. Well, let's turn now to the Military Officer magazine, the magazine of the Military Officers Association of America, for this very interesting article, True Love or Total Scam? How Romance Scams Lure Troops, Veterans, and Survivors. This is by Anna Durrani. Once upon a time, in the age of digital love, A veteran who was longing for connection after years of loss met a charming stranger. Maybe it started with a simple swipe or a flirtatious comment on your social media profile. The words were attentive, sweet, and comforting. Soon, marathon chats turned into early morning professions of love. They called you their soulmate. If only you two lived closer. They promised you everything. Two star-crossed lovers defying the odds. Surely love will find a way. Next, they asked for help. Maybe it was to pay for a plane ticket, for a visit, or a medical misfortune. They just needed a little bit of money so the two of you could finally be together and live happily ever after. Only, this love story wasn't written for you alone. You're a victim of a romance scam. Fraudsters create fake profiles online and via apps to target multiple individuals, chat often to build a relationship, make up a fake story, and ask for money. Romance scams are an epidemic. They prey on people from all walks of life. The scams typically originate via text, social media, dating sites, and any site where you can interact with others, said John M. Griffin, a renowned forensic finance expert and finance professor at Macomb School of Business at the University of Texas at Austin. There were 64,003 romance scams reported in 2023, according to the Federal Trade Commission data, with reported losses totaling $1.14 billion. For the first 9 months of 2024, the agency received 42,399 reports of romance scams, accounting for $823 million reported lost, according to an FTC spokesperson. The scammers, who are often part of large criminal gangs, post fake profiles and have a knowledge of psychology Freud would have envied as they slowly build trust with their targeted victim until they start asking for money for a variety of reasons, said Steve Weissman, a law professor at Bentley University. Weissman is the creator of the blog Scamicide, which details the latest scams and ways people can protect themselves. He said scammers typically prey on the most vulnerable, such as widows, widowers, lonely people, and the elderly. They also target veterans and uniformed services personnel as well as their families. Since 2020, active duty service members have reported 1,751 incidents of romance scams with losses of $16.1 million, according to an FTC spokesperson, impersonating service members. While military members might be targets of romance scams, they are increasingly unwitting accomplices. Scammers steal their photos and identities to deceive individuals looking for love. Petty Officer First Class Mike Sensi, U.S. Navy, knows this all too well. His photos have been used by fraudsters to scam countless women. The first time it was used for catfishing was 2014, and it is still used today, Sensi said, referring to the act of setting up a fake profile on social networking site in order to deceive. It began by scamming women on dating sites and then made its way to social media, where complete fake profiles would be used for all types of scams, Sensi added. At this point, I've lost count of the fake profiles across the internet, but Facebook alone is in the thousands over the years. At its worst, he said, he would get 4 messages a week from people worldwide informing him that his pictures were being used for a scam. The numbers have dropped dramatically, but maybe once a month now I will still receive a new message asking me if we are dating or have been talking romantically, Sensi said. Army recruiter Sergeant First Class Cesar Camacho has been dealing with romance scammers impersonating him since 2020. There are about 50 fake accounts on Facebook and Instagram, with others on TikTok, he said, and he's received texts and emails from victims, some of whom have contacted his co-workers and his wife. One victim FaceTimed my wife to tell her, "Your husband is leaving you. He's on a plane right now coming to see me." My wife panned her phone and showed her I was not on a plane, Camacho said. The victim claimed I stole her money as I told her she was scammed. efforts to stop scammers. Scammers impersonate military service members and veterans because they're a symbol of strength and protection, and we typically trust people in such positions. The same with doctors, lawyers, and police, said Martina Dove, Ph.D., fraud prevention expert and author of The Psychology of Fraud, Persuasion, and Scam Techniques. Dove said the techniques used by romance scammers vary. Most is just building trust, discussing life together to enhance emotional dependence, giving gifts to get the victim to feel like they have to return the favor, and when that doesn't work, blackmail and threats of ending the relationship, Dove said. But there are efforts underway to combat scammers, Camacho said. A Facebook group called Scam Haters United, which boasts 78,000 followers, helped him get several fake accounts closed. Basically, if scammers are there, so are we, said Ruth Grosvenor, who runs the group on several social media platforms. We can't manage to stop them all, but we do have a way of helping to close as many as we can. We also talk to the women who come to them. There's also Advocating Against Romance Scammers, AARS, a nonprofit co-founded by retired Army Colonel Brian Denny, who since 2016 has dealt with romance scammers impersonating him. Denny said, "Internet crimes take advantage of lonely people, and it shouldn't be a crime to be lonely." The group uses its platform to educate the public and raise awareness about romance scams. They're also working to drive legislative changes. AARS continues to meet with lawmakers in an effort to amend Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act, a law that shields social media platforms from being responsible for any third-party posts. "I think there are repercussions that ought to happen there," Denny said. How to protect yourself. Meanwhile, individuals can take steps to protect themselves from romance scams. This starts by being aware of red flags, said Fangzu Wang, Ph.D., an assistant professor in the Department of Criminology and Criminal Justice at the University of Texas at Arlington. Wang listed several such red flags. A too perfect profile that has professionally taken photos with vague details. Rapid declarations of love, but without in-person meetings or video calls. Contradictory information. A sense of urgency or pressure. The promotion of business opportunities or investments in cryptocurrency. Romance scammers often give their victims cryptocurrency to build trust, Griffin said. Once you move money to a crypto investment, it's gone. We find $75 billion moving into foreign exchanges in these criminal networks, Griffin said. The crypto often flows from Western countries to Southeast Asian crypto exchanges. Experts say it's also important to trust your gut. Be skeptical. If someone online seems too good to be true, they probably are, Wang said. She recommends verifying identities by requesting video calls and looking for inconsistencies, and by performing reverse image searches via TinEye or Google Images. Right-click on an image to save it to your desktop and then upload it to a Google Images search to see where it appears online. If their profile picture appears on multiple websites under different names, it's likely fake, Wang said. Lastly, she suggests reporting scammers by filing complaints with the FTC online at reportfraud.ftc.gov. That's reportfraud.ftc.gov. The FBI's Internet Crime Complaint Center, or the Better Business Bureau. Our author, Annie Durrani, is a freelance writer based in California, writing the article for the Military Officer magazine, True Love or Total Scam. We'll turn now to news.va.gov, and in this case, the newsletter from the Phoenix VA healthcare system, Veterans News Now. And our first item from that newsletter is Phoenix Bookmobile Event. Bookmobile, July the 1st, 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. It'll be at the Carl T. Hayden VAMC ACC entrance, bringing the Phoenix Public Library to you. Tuesday, July the 1st, is the kickoff celebration for Phoenix's new partnership with the Phoenix Public Library Systems. Beginning July 1st, Phoenix Library will bring their bookmobile to the Carl T. Hayden VA Medical Center every first Tuesday of the month. Veterans, families, and their caregivers will have access to thousands of selections in the mobile library, and Maricopa County residents will even be able to obtain library cards. Join us for some light refreshments to help celebrate and welcome our new partnership, Things to Do, on our Rolling Free Library. You can get a free library card for Maricopa County residents. It works at all 18 Phoenix libraries. You can borrow books, movies, seeds, and culture passes. You can meet their friendly staff, watch a movie, and enjoy the air conditioning. And that's the Phoenix Bookmobile event, July the 1st, 10 to 12. From that same newsletter, we have June is National Migraine and Headache Awareness Month. As June marks Migraine and Headache Awareness Month, the Phoenix VA healthcare system is dedicated to raising awareness about migraines and headaches and their profound effect on daily life. These conditions are notably common among veterans and can be triggered by a variety of factors such as stress, sleep disturbances, diet, and other medical conditions. By recognizing symptoms, one-sided throbbing head pain, sensitivity to light, sound, or smells, and neck pain, you can take significant steps toward effectively managing these conditions. Tips for managing migraines and headaches. Identify and avoid triggers. Keep a headache diary to track potential triggers and patterns. Second, maintain regular sleep and meal schedules. Consistency in sleep and meal times can help reduce the frequency of headaches. Third, stay hydrated and eat balanced meals. Proper hydration and nutrition are key to overall health and can prevent headaches. Fourth, practice relaxation techniques. Techniques such as meditation can help manage stress and reduce headache occurrences. 5. Engage in regular physical activity. Exercise can improve overall health and help in managing migraines. 6. Seek mental health support. Managing stress through mental health support is crucial in preventing headaches. Treatment options at the Phoenix VA. The Phoenix VA offers a broad range of treatment options to help veterans manage migraines and headaches, and these include medications, various prescriptions tailored to individual needs, physical therapy to address underlying physical contributors to headaches, biofeedback, a technique you can use to learn to control some of your body's functions, such as heart rate, complementary therapies. Options such as acupuncture are available for those seeking alternative treatment routes. If you experience frequent or severe headaches, we highly encourage you to reach out to your primary care team for personalized guidance and support. Early intervention and appropriate management can considerably enhance your quality of life. For more information, please contact your primary care team. From VA News, they say, women veterans deserve respect. VA promises to be a safe place to receive care. Nationwide, 81% of women in the U.S. report experiencing some form of harassment or assault in their lifetime, compared to 43% of men. A recent women veterans study found that some women have reported being harassed while on VA grounds, a place where all veterans deserve respectful and safe care. These experiences send a negative message to the veterans VA serves. For women veterans, harassment in a healthcare setting can bring up earlier military sexual trauma. This is not acceptable. What harassment looks like? For women veterans, harassment can take many forms, including being called inappropriate names like sweetheart or baby, enduring catcalling, staring, or leering, receiving intrusive questions such as, are you single? Being told you don't look like you belong here. Getting unwanted comments about appearance or clothing. Experiencing invasive actions like being touched, followed, or photographed without permission. Being repeatedly referred to as Mr. when called for appointments. These behaviors aren't just uncomfortable, they can also remind the veteran of past traumatic experiences. Some veterans may avoid, miss, or delay important healthcare appointments as a result. Also in the newsletter, they announce for today, the 26th of June, Hopi Code Talkers Recognition Day. Because of our fathers, our language and life will live into eternity. The Hopi Veterans Memorial Center, Kaikotsmovi, Arizona, 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. Mountain Standard Time, and the featured Hopi Code Talker, Warren Kayuyak-Awap-Tewa, U.S. Army. In recognition of the 10 Hopi Code Talkers who served with the 81st Wildcat Division, U.S. Army, the 90th Bombardment, and the 380th Bombardment Groups, Army Air Force during World War II, we celebrate Hopi Code Talkers Recognition Day, and to honor all the Native American Code Talkers who served in World Wars I and II, using their native language to help win both wars. More information or to volunteer for the event, you can call Hopi Veterans Services at 928-734-3461 or 3462. A code never broken. And that's the Hopi Code Talkers Recognition Day, and that's today at the Hopi Veterans Memorial Center, Kaikotsmovi, Arizona, 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. On Friday, June the 27th at 9 a.m. is Coffee for Vets. All veterans are welcome. Join us for coffee and donuts, share a story, and regroup with other veterans in the Globe, Miami, San Carlos area. Their meeting, Friday, June the 27th at 9 a.m. Special guest will be a representative from the VA to answer any questions about eligibility and caregiver benefits. And for more information, you can call Carissa Naus at 928-200-4594. That's 928-200-4594. This will be at the Cobra Valley Recreation Center at 4877 Cypress Way, Miami, Arizona, 85539, Coffee for Vets. Up the information from the Veterans News Now newsletter from the Phoenix VA healthcare system. Well, let's turn now to news.va.gov for this item. VA enlists digital tool to help prevent veteran suicide. This is from the 24th of June by Aja Rhodes, Director, Office of Communication, VA Office of Information and Technology. VA's long-standing digital tool that helps reduce veterans' homelessness was recently expanded to aid in suicide prevention. The Status Query and Response Exchange System, or SQUARES, is a VA web application launched in 2025. It provides VA employees and external organizations such as homeless service community partners, law enforcement partners, police departments, sheriff departments, courts and jails, and local, state, and federal agencies with reliable, detailed information about veteran eligibility for VA homeless assistance. Now, in 2025, it includes veteran verification and eligibility for VA suicide prevention, legal services, and health care. This is in addition to the Veterans Crisis Line, dial 988 and press 1, available to all veterans 24/7. When using SQUARES, the user is searching on behalf of veterans who are in crisis for one of these services. Our job is to take a veteran out of crisis immediately, help them with whatever we can do, said Ray Ivaska, VA's product line manager for SQUARES. Making a difference. Users submit identity attributes for homeless or otherwise at-risk individuals, name, date of birth, social security number, sex, and SQUARES returns information regarding the veteran's status, eligibility for health care, and VA programs. SQUARES is making a major impact in the community. For more information, watch the following videos. SQUARES Overview, which is available at youtube.com/watch V equals RFB V hyphen FUCT XY. Now, these links are kind of complicated and difficult, but you can always go back to news.va.gov and look for technology or top stories to get those links directly. Or you can go back to the Sun Sounds of Arizona website and select Weekly Reveille and re-listen to those links online. There's also the Squares search tools, and that's, again, available from YouTube. Watch V equals ZEFKDEQE11M. Again, I recommend going to news.va.gov and finding the links there. In states, cities, and towns nationwide, the Square's capability is vastly improving housing access for veterans. It will now also help state and local governments and organizations identify and connect veterans with VA suicide prevention and legal services. VA Square's technology is positively enhancing our service delivery in New York City, said New York City Department of Veterans Services Commissioner James Hendon. Squares enables agency staff to identify veteran clients within existing caseloads, helping to connect more veterans with the benefits they've rightfully earned. While only 24.1% of New York City veterans currently self-identify, Squares has helped us reach those who might otherwise remain unseen in the system. We applaud VA's implementation of this tool and look forward to expanding its use to improve access to care for our veterans and their families. In practice, Squares increases speed in veteran eligibility determinations and improves visibility of resources for homeless veterans and those at risk for suicide. Community advocates. States, cities, local governments, and organizations that encounter veterans in their communities needing assistance can register for Squares. This allows governments and local organizations, often closest to veterans in need, to direct necessary assistance where it's needed the most. VA encourages our state, city, and local partners to register for and use Squares so that every veteran can access the support they've earned and the vital care they need. And that was VA Enlist's digital tool to help prevent veteran suicide. This is your volunteer reader, Chuck Kaufman. I'd like to thank you for joining me for this Thursday edition of Weekly Reveille here on Sun Sounds of Arizona. Remember, if you want to find out about those links, you can go to news.va.gov, or you can go back to sunsounds.org and select Weekly Reveille to listen to the program again, or any other Sun Sounds of Arizona programming. And by the way, that same capability exists on the Sun Sounds of Arizona app, which is available from the Apple App Store for your iPhone or iPad, or the Google Play Store for your Android phone or tablet. And of course, you can always listen to the Sun Sounds of Arizona stream, including Weekly Reveille, by listening on your Amazon Dot or Echo.